Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jamie Lewis, and I am with the Louisiana Public Health Institute. Happy to be here with you all today to share a little bit about how we implemented the Thrive Tool here in New Orleans and across the state. So I don't have any relationships to disclose, so we'll move through that pretty quickly. And today's learning objective, to build on what Sarah talked about, was more of a tailored approach. How did we make this tool our own and how it was useful to us, and how easily we were able to integrate it with other projects that were already taking place. So a little bit about New Orleans and LPHI. First of all, welcome to New Orleans. I'm sure you've heard it many times over by now, but I am a New Orleanian, so I had to say it again. New Orleans is an amazing city. It has a very rich culture, a very rich history. It's over 300 years old. There's a lot of great things that take place here, but conversely, unfortunately for some of us, there's a lot of bad things that we still have to work on to make improvements and thrive. And being able to work in the community and use the Thrive Tool has really been an eye-opening experience and allowing the communities to really dig deeper into what those problems are. The Louisiana Public Health Institute, as Sarah mentioned, it is a member institute of the National Network. We are a standalone institute. We've been in existence for about 17 years. We were founded in 1997. We are located here in New Orleans, but we do work across the entire state. We have regional managers in each of the 9 public health regions of Louisiana. The presentation today is divided into 2 sections. The first is the implementations. We actually use Thrive 3 times in 3 different ways, and I'll talk a little bit about those and how those are all different. And the second part of the presentation is more about how we tailored it to fit the needs of the communities and the individuals that we were working with, and I'll share a little bit about lessons learned at the end. So first up, when we received the Thrive Tool, or when we joined the first cohort, we were working on several programs in Healthy Communities portfolio already, one of which was the REACH Core Project, which was a cooperative agreement with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Some of you may be familiar with the REACH projects that CDC does. There have been several different iterations of them. But for those of you who aren't, REACH stands for Racial and Ethnic Approaches to Community Health. The core projects were centered around assessment. So we had 2 years of funding to focus specifically on community health assessment. And we decided to undertake that process at a neighborhood level, specifically working with the Holly Grove and Central City communities in New Orleans. Simultaneously, while working on REACH Core, we were implementing or starting HealthyNOLA.org, which is a website developed by the Institute that focuses on data democratization. So we provide data free of charge to the community, to the greater New Orleans area, at a neighborhood level. Data that's not typically available at that granular of a level, and hopes that they'll be able to use it to support their own community change and make more informed decisions about their health. Similar to the community toolbox, Healthy NOLA also houses resources, maybe about 200 different resources and links to different tools and toolkits. So as we were implementing this work and Thrive came along, we thought it was a great opportunity to integrate the tool and provide a training to those communities we were already engaging with. So that's exactly what we did. We hosted a training that was about half day long. And we tailored it to meet the needs of those communities, the things we already knew, and I'll get more into that later on in the presentation. But as a result, the REACH Core communities, which were also a targeted effort of Healthy NOLA, we were working directly with those communities to increase uptake of the website. They were able to develop a comprehensive community action plan that was originally aimed at managing and reducing the prevalence of type 2 diabetes. And they were able, after using the Thrive Tool, they were able to expand the areas that they wanted to focus on to be a much more comprehensive approach. So we saw, when the plan was completed, they wanted to focus on issues such as violence prevention, affordable housing, or blighted housing, in support of reducing the prevalence of diabetes. So it really expanded the horizons of those groups. The second time we implemented Thrive, was we did a train-the-trainer model for our regional managers, who are also, in addition to working with the Louisiana Campaigns for Tobacco-Free Living, are co-chairing Louisiana Healthy Communities Coalitions. There are 9 Healthy Communities Coalitions, 1 in each of the regions. And these regions, when they started, these coalitions were to take a look at what's going on in each of these regions and determine how they could support community health interventions. So using the Thrive tool as a starting point for this group of individuals was a great asset. So again, we hosted about a half-day long training for our staff members for them to get a feel for the tool and start to understand where they thought it was applicable. And they then had the opportunity to go back and host it in their own communities. And we did have one staff member host a training in Monroe, Louisiana, which is up north, northeast Louisiana. And she was very successful. I believe she had about 100 people turn out to her training, and she was also able to offer continuing education units during that training. So it was a great success for her. Her Healthy Communities Coalition, this was about a year ago, has gone on to accomplish great things. They've also recently passed a smoke-free ordinance in Monroe, for three parish ordinances in Monroe, as a result of their working together collaboratively. And the last time that we implemented it was at our all-staff meeting. We gather monthly as a unit, as an entire organization. We have about 100 staff members. And this particular year, we were doing a spotlight for each of the programs or portfolios every month. So the community health portfolio had a chance to showcase the work that it does, and we thought that Thrive would be an appropriate application. It was a great way to introduce the organization to it. However, the Thrive training, and Sarah gave a little bit of information about it, but it goes really in-depth because it is geared towards general community members at large. So it gets really in-depth to the definition of what public health is, why prevention is important, what health equity means. And that can be very redundant for a room full of public health professionals. If I stood here for 20 minutes and lectured you all on what public health was, half of you would get up and leave. So we had to tailor that training to meet our staff's needs, but we still had a great experience. We provided the training in about 45 minutes because that's all we had. But the way that we geared the training was that we kept most of the interactive exercises and spoke more to the factors, some of the Thrive factors that weren't commonly talked about. People normally associate food scarcity or housing issues with public health, and they can make that connection pretty easily. Arts and culture is usually a harder stretch for people to make, so we focused on those factors that are more difficult for people to understand. As a result of that, I've had several coworkers come to me and want to collaborate on customizing the tool or implementing it in their own programs, so it was a great experience and more ways for us to implement. And so now I'll talk a little bit about how we tailored the tool to each of our presentations. One of the slides, the very early slides in Thrive, like I said, it gets really in-depth into what health equity is and what public health is, and it does a great job of illustrating that. One of the slides they use focuses on Washington, D.C. and life expectancy. So we have, when we give this presentation, we switch it out for this slide, which comes to us from Place Matters, New Orleans. New Orleans is pretty small. I don't know how much of the city you guys have seen, but you can probably travel from this tip of 70129 all the way to the other side in about 20 minutes. So to have a 20-year life expectancy difference across those zip codes is phenomenal. And that slide really hits home for a lot of people. So that's why we use this one. We also added local success stories. One of the factors was community participation and willingness to act together. One of our communities, our Reach Core communities, Holly Grove, actually pulled themselves together to get a local bar shut down. This bar was a haven for drugs and crime, murders, violence, just about anything you could think of. One of the issues with getting it shut down was that they weren't able to document the crimes that were happening as being linked to the bar, because people would always report it on the corner not associated with the bar. So the community was able to work with their quality of life officer, which is an OPD officer in their neighborhood, and identify that as the actual problem. And so they were able to do some outreach efforts and get the community to start reporting things as occurring at this bar. And as a result of that, they were able to get this bar shut down. They went to city council, and not only were they able to get it closed and have the liquor license revoked, this location can never be a bar again. They were able to get zoning, get the area rezoned. So lessons learned from this process. It's always easier to get people to come out and spend a whole or a half day with you if you incentivize it. So feed people whenever you can, or any other incentive that you may have. Like I mentioned, my colleague was able to get CEs, and that was a great incentive for her audience. Secondly, know your audience. Like I mentioned, I've given this presentation to the community and to public health professionals, and it's a completely different presentation. You don't want to bore people, and you don't want to leave people confused. So definitely knowing your audience helps. that is also important to being aware of your time constraints and staying on time. I've had the opportunity to go through a whole day training, and it's great if you have the time for it. But generally, when you're working with communities, it's difficult to get people who are volunteering their time to spend 8 hours with you. So be creative. Be mindful of other people's schedules. We've done half-day trainings. We've also considered doing it as a series, so incorporating it into an already occurring meeting, maybe in 2 or 3 hour blocks. But be creative about it, and definitely be aware of the time that's allotted to you. And always allow time for conversation. Generally, when we give presentations, we think a lot about how fast can we get through our content? How fast can I say what I need to say and communicate that? This tool is a great conversation starter. It's a great place for communities to come together and start understanding and having conversations about the issues that are really going on. So you always want to allow time for them to communicate with one another and really start working on those issues. What's next for LPHI and Thrive? We are available, if anyone's interested, locally for us to do the training. We're happy to do it. We're happy to host those trainings for our community. We are also integrating Thrive into our healthy communities strategic planning. So thinking of how we can use it more proactively instead of waiting for folks to come and ask us for it. And lastly, we are embarking on a new project, a new community health assessment project, of which Thrive will be a big part. We'll also be training that community on it and incorporating the tool into their assessment and planning process. And that is all from me. Here's my contact information. And please let me know if you have any questions.
We've got plenty of time for conversation, so we would invite you to open it up and offer some questions, insights, connections, sharing. We've got space for all the above, so please engage our panelists. Please.
For the CTV, when you're doing trainings, the trainings are, I mean, we do the trainings, other people use the curriculum for trainings as well, and it's always the case that if someone is using the curriculum for a training workshop, we're assuming they're facilitated, they have some facilitation skills, and have some experience, and are, you know, really promote the idea of adapting and including different material, supplemental material into the training. So I would say that does happen, yes.
The toolbox itself, though, is text heavy as resources go. And it's a little hard because of it's used in 230 countries. And so it's a little difficult to come up with images that are universal and that could work for all of the issues to which people apply it. At least has been for us. We would welcome your creative thinking about how to do that, though.
If I could share.
Please.
Go ahead. Oh, are you sure? Okay. So, for example, the University for Development Studies were trying to develop the slides, on how to engage community leaders. Well, in Tamale, Ghana, they have, the chief as being really the leader. And so they had this video about, coming and asking the leader for support. And for us, it may not be useful, here living in America, but for other countries in Africa, they could see that, they could adapt that into their own context, assuring how do you respect a leader when asking for support for clean water type of initiative or any initiative. You have to go through the leader and the elders first and then the community. And so for them, that's a video they, take snapshots of those kind of things, and then that's how they train trainers.
Sarah.
I wanted to share a little bit in the approach that Prevention Institute shares in the training, and when we bring together the three additional institutes to go through the Train the Trainer in a couple of weeks, we've invited them to kind of look at the information about Thrive and the factors, and to document in their community some of the environmental photos that they, photos that kind of show how their environment kind of aligns with some of the factors in the Thrive tool, and so that as they come to the training, they can share part of their story of their community. And the example that I gave with Public Health Institute in California, they asked the same of the youth. They said, please go out and document, like, what are some of the signs that you see that, you know, are keeping our community from being healthy? And so they kind of brought their own photos and voice into the project. And that's
great. There was a, please, I think you're next.
No, we're, and it's, Dr. White couldn't be here, so I'm Dr. Schultz, but that's okay.
Sorry.
Not to worry. The technical assistance is being provided to the staff of the independent living centers. So that's ongoing. So there's about 12 centers that are engaged, and so there are, and there are cohorts of them. So they're kind of, we have kind of group technical assistance calls once a month with each of those groups.
As Jerry was saying, there's an attempt on the part of the team. I'm an observer, but what I've witnessed is an attempt to use the troubleshooting guides on the toolbox as a way to do situation assessments in preparing the Centers for Independent Living to do their own situation assessments when we're gone. Which we are always, right? We're inevitably, we're not present with forever. And so there's an attempt to build capacity by having those tools that'll be there forever.
I'm not quite sure. So, in terms of limitations of the what the CTB is covering in terms of core competencies, in terms of this particular project, I think those were those competencies were chosen by the people we were working with. And so, in some ways, those priorities were what they felt they wanted. So. I would say that's not necessarily the case with this particular project. I would think that I think the core competency training is pretty comprehensive, but there's always gaps, and there's new resources and approaches that are developed over time, and so I think there's always potential for gaps along the way. But those are 16 core competencies that have stood the test of time pretty well.
There's always the challenge, though, of adapting for issues and context. And so although there might be examples in there about addressing issues related to accessible transit, there may not be for housing accommodations or something else. And I was struck by Jamie's description of how much experience went into understanding the audience of public health well enough to make an adaptation of that particular tool you were working with for that context, so people stayed with you, they weren't bored, they didn't leave, they stayed engaged. And I think that kind of work of adaptation for culture, context, circumstance, low and high resource environments, that takes experience, like such as you have. And I think that's harder to, in our experience at least, it's harder to adjust for on our own. It requires partners who are deeply experienced in a place with issues to pull that off.
Yeah, so I don't know if your question was related specifically to independent living issues. If it was, I mean, the training is really about helping the staff and the community to identify those areas of need. And so that some of it's related to assessment, some of it's related to agenda setting and priority setting by the community. So and ultimately those important issues would arise through the training process.
Are there tools that we would commend to each other that we've been using for assessment, planning, advocacy, evaluation, any of the issues that you're working on? Are there some that we'd commend you'd like to see wider spread use of? Please.
One thing that I feel a lot was community asset mapping or
In the toolbox, there's a couple of great, I don't know that they're chapters, sections within some of the chapters around.
Within chapter two, there's a section on that approach, the McKnight and others approach. Yeah, it's a brilliant framing for things. But here's an example of that was written maybe, I don't know, 10 years ago. And I'll bet it's close to that. And you think about the technological innovations now that make asset mapping with combined with GIS, a much more powerful tool. And so there's always innovations that aren't keeping up with whatever clearinghouses we've got for tools and supports. Because you showed us some examples of concentrations of overlapping issues in place, and I'm sure you've got asset maps too that you've developed that reflect the positive side of things.
So then helping all the website that I mentioned is essentially a giant interactive asset map. It maps each at a neighborhood level all the resources, everything from parks to grocery stores to bike repair.
And Jamie, where could they find that? What's the web address for that?
It is under update right now. So I can give it to you. It's helpingola.org. But it is being updated.
Be a little patient. Are there any additional comments or thoughts, particularly about things you'd like to share that the rest of us should be aware of in terms of tools that could support this work? With that, please thank our panel. Thank you.